join us as we cover many an insane movie and numerous cult TV phenomenons. Are you ready to get jacked up? Are you with us? Then listen on.
This is Lindsay G. I'm a writer and a publisher in charge of Oneshi Press. That's O-N-E-S-H-I-P-R-E-S-S. And I've got my own website at lindseyg.com. That's spelled L-Y-N-S-E-Y-G.com. So I want to talk a little bit about Christian Bale. I have not followed his full career arc very closely. He doesn't always do the types of movies that I'm interested in, personally, but I've always found him really interesting as a person, from the beginning till now. He's had a lot of bad press. I kind of get the feeling that he's not the kind of person that most people want to hang out with. I think he's really intense. I've heard that his method acting takes it to a new level, and you can look at The Machinist to realize how true that is. You know, where he lost so much weight, became so thin and gaunt and frightening, versus, you know, him in Batman, where he was a hulking beast. I find that also interesting because I believe I've read that he's a vegetarian, possibly even a vegan, which means that he really puts in the work to get his body to where it needs to be. You know, he's not like mainlining steaks or anything. But the reason I've always been so interested in Christian Bale is because in 1992, when I was, I guess, about 11, no, younger than that, I was 9, I saw Newsies, which, for those who are not familiar, was a live-action Disney musical about the newspaper seller's strike of the very end of the 19th century, when the newsboys who sold newspapers on the street of New York City struck and went up against Joseph Pulitzer, one of the most powerful men in New York and probably in the United States at that time. The movie is, well, it's a Disney musical. There's a lot going on. Probably a lot could be improved upon as far as historical accuracy, etc. goes. But the music is rousing. And two of the big stars, the headliners of the movie, billed above Christian Bale because he was a nobody at the time, I think he was about 18, were Anne Margaret and Robert Duvall. And they were amazing. Absolutely amazing. They acted the absolute hell out of their parts as a show woman who was helping the Newsies, and as Joseph Pulitzer himself, respectively. Bill Pullman also played the role of the journalist who was on the side of the Newsies and helped them organize so that they could strike and demand better wages. So, anyway, I didn't exactly fall in love with Christian Bale in this movie. For one thing, his New York accent was abysmal. He's Welsh. Didn't really go over so well. And his character is not super lovable. It's sort of all of the supporting cast that really make you love the movie. But his portrayal of this down-on-his-luck orphan kid who dreams of getting out of New York and moving to New Mexico, where he tells everyone his family's waiting for him, but, you know, obviously he's lying, he's an orphan, was really nuanced, even given the sort of singing and dancing farce of a movie that he was a part of. He had this brooding quality that really went deep. And even though, like I said, he wasn't really the highlight of the movie for me, I became more interested. And especially as his name grew in Hollywood and he was getting more and more roles, I started getting more interested in him because I think, to date, that's the only movie that I would call even slightly lighthearted that I've ever seen him in. And that brooding character that I saw in him when he was, you know, 17 or 18 when they filmed Newsies definitely comes across in his later work and was clearly read by, you know, casting agents. But I still like to see him in something new where he's inevitably playing some dark and usually scary in some way role, and then think back on him singing and dancing about Santa Fe as a teenager, and weirdly how much has changed and yet how little has changed about him. I find that fascinating, and I find him deeply compelling, even though, like I said, I don't think I would ever want to hang out with the dude. He scares me. I think there's a lot there that's worth coming back to again and again. So that's my Christian Bale love story. And for those of you who have not seen Newsies, it had a short Broadway run as a musical, which I thought was far too late. I don't know why they didn't have one as soon as the movie, you know, was out of theaters, because I would have gone in a heartbeat when I was a kid. I basically lived on Newsies music throughout high school until I discovered Rocky Horror Picture Show and Les Miserables. But I have a deep and abiding love for Newsies and for Christian Bale and for literally everyone else who's in that movie. And if you haven't seen it, I really recommend it. I mean, that is, if you can deal with musicals, not everyone can. Personally, I'm a huge fan.
Welcome, welcome, ladies and gents. We got another fun outing. And here with me is the Macy's duo from Comfort Films. Welcome aboard.
Hello.
I'm
very glad to be here.
Yeah. Really, we are just going to be talking about another unusual actor, the Welsh boy that is Christian Bale.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Even though you can't pin down his accent ever.
No.
Right. A
bunch of different places. Like he was born in Wales.
Yes.
But then he's English.
His father was South African, yep. And it says
pretty complicated.
grew up in Portugal, U.S., like all kind of places. So yeah, pretty good.
Yeah, totally. He can do accents, and I mean, yeah. I'm terrible with one accent, and he's got like a bunch in his pocket.
I know. I'm Southern. I'm from Mississippi, and I can't not sound like that. So I'm pretty impressed when somebody has such a command of it that like he does.
Totally.
Yeah, and also he, I guess, talks in the accent of whatever movie he's in during the interviews and things like that. I read that if he's got an American accent in a movie, he does all the interviews in an American accent so as not to confuse the audience.
Yeah,
right.
That's pretty good. Well, yeah, what was it, Ford versus Ferrari, right? I was watching an interview with Matt.
Oh, yeah.
And then, like, Matt Damon was like, well, you know, he's still totally the same because Matt Damon is, like, known Christian Bale's wife for 20 years. So they can still carry on a conversation in between takes, but he just keeps that same voice.
Yeah, and his voice in that was
It's
odd.
A typical method acting choice where, yeah, it's like you're not – everyone just gets confused with Daniel Day-Lewis, but so he's pretty much like Denzel Washington or Vincent D'Onofrio, where they'll, or even just even crazier actors like Michael Ironside, like they, like you say, they speak to everyone in that same voice. It's just easier as opposed to just clearing their throat and all that, you know, at the end of the day, just talk the same way and just keep it. And I get it. It sounds odd to many, but it's kind of just part of this crazy world that is that. And he's been fortunate enough to work with all kinds of filmmakers, David Ayer, Steven Spielberg, Christopher Nolan, and currently David O. Russell and Scott Cooper. So,
yeah.
Yeah, we really enjoy the Scott Cooper stuff. It was interesting. We were kind of in prep for this, looking over his filmography and
Terrence
just seeing
Malick,
like,
of all things. Yeah.
Terrence Malick is one of my very favorites, although I haven't seen Knight of Cups yet, so
I never saw Knight of Cups either. It's one that's on the list.
But New World, he did New World with him, and
yeah, I remember
that movie. It's a great one.
Yeah, New World, I can get behind. Knight of Cups, I don't know what the hell I watched from that one.
Yeah, that's kind of why I've been avoiding it, because I'm a pretty big Terrence Malick fan. I love Thin Red Line. It's one of my favorite movies ever. It's just so good, and of course Badlands. But Yeah, Knight of Cups, I heard not great things about. So I was like, well, I'll just put that one in my pocket. Maybe right. Do it later.
Well, I had it sitting in my queue for a while. It was like on Amazon Prime. And I always be like, tonight's the night. Tonight's the night. And that night just didn't come.
Didn't ever come. Well, someday it'll come. We'll watch it together.
I mean, we've done them all. Like, I can't say we've done them all. We've done most of them. Like, for me, the first thing that I remember seeing him in was Velvet Goldmine back when I was in college.
That's a good way of putting it. So yeah, I was kind of late to the party. I had heard about American Psycho and the Shaft continuation, which he pretty much both did very awesome villains in both. And
but
by Batman Begins, everyone was pretty much going back, checking out stuff he had done, Reign of Fire, Equilibrium, Swing Kids, Prince of Jutland. He has a voice in Pocahontas, you know? And
Little Women is actually the first thing I remember knowing who he was.
And that was a big year, just back to back, just with Prince of Jutland, which is this film he did with then unknown Kate Beckinsale and Gabriel Byrne and Helen Mirren. So
and Gabriel Byrne was in Little Women also, so that's interesting.
Is that the one they later renamed Royal Deceit? All right, I've seen part of that. I haven't seen all of that.
It used to get played quite a lot, and now I don't even know where you would find most of his stuff on streaming. You would pretty much just have to shell out and buy the DVDs. And around the time he did Velvet Goldmine, All the Little Animals was a very depressing but very well acted movie he did with John Hurt, where he's just this emotionally challenged guy. And I think by the time I saw that and The Machinist and especially Psycho, I was like, okay, he can do no wrong. He's going to keep playing these characters who are just impossible to sum up without even just watching it. Like, Harsh Times, pretty much his taxi driver. He's just going around and he's aimless, hanging out with a bunch of cholos. And he's
just unhinged in that one. It's so weird.
Yeah, I mean,
and it was so different. Like, I was watching it and I'm like, how is Christian Bale in this movie?
How do you stay sane, you know?
Well, it's like the beginning is like the war footage, right? Yeah. And then he has like the major PTSD when he comes back. And that's a movie that, like, I don't know, the part that sticks with me is like when they're hanging out with Terry Crews, and Terry Crews has it on speaker when, like, he's like saying that he didn't go to work. And you remember this? He didn't go for the job. And so he just totally gets busted by his girlfriend.
Rewatch will help. But David Ayer is always very scattershot with his narratives, much like Street Kings and Training Day. And I had already seen those two and came back to this one. And it was just like, okay, so basically, with his whole East LA format, basically, his Latino pals keep him in check, and they've just known each other since childhood. And you can kind of assume from they were both in the same Marine unit. But by the time he goes and tries to interview to be a police officer, and of course he can't not be high on drugs, he fails the piss test, and basically by that point he's just like, he has basically nothing to keep him stable. No, and you're kind of glad, because you would hate to see someone like him being a police officer. And at the same time, you're just like,
you know what happens.
And this is like, and at that point, basically, he's just a selfish prick. And just basically just can't, he just can't contain himself. It's like, he loses his girlfriend, he loses the money, and now he doesn't even know what he should even exist for. So it's just like, it's just even funny how by that point, even his friend gives up on it. It's like, dude, I used to tell you to chill, you know, and calm down. And now, nothing can calm you down.
Well, I mean, when he fails, when he gets like the letter that he fails, he just freaks out on like this normal guy in the car next to him. It's like, he's just going to take him out. And you're like, oh, wow.
Sometimes in LA, I feel like I'm going to do that just on a regular day, because that's where we live.
So. Well, and it made sense to me why you pretty much did Out of the Furnace from that point on, because that's the same kind of deal. He's just a quiet man waiting to explode, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's really,
that's my favorite.
That's kind of Hostiles is like that also.
Also with Scott Cooper. And it's so wild. It's like, they're both basically, all three of these are basically neo-westerns, even though they're in like suburbs and country town areas. It's like, it's basically it. I mean, Hostiles is a western, but it's also just like an atypical one. It's not about the battles and everything, you know?
Bale does good westerns. I mean,
310
to Yuma is really good also.
310 to Yuma was good. I kind of prefer the original, but I mean, So how do you feel? So which movie do you feel like he gets basically stolen from him and he's struggling to kind of try and contain his own? This one with Russell Crowe or The Dark Knight with Heath Ledger? You know, because
oh my gosh,
basically he's the straight face in both of them and he's having to just say, no, you will not do that.
Yeah, it's difficult because I think Christian Bale tends to kind of embody the part so much that he kind of disappears into it a lot of the time anyway. And then when you put him up against this person who is just really going all out, like mm-hmm. Russell Crowe in 310 or Heath Ledger, it's almost easy to lose what Bale is doing because he can be so subtle.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to be. I mean, American Psycho is the most unsubtle thing in the world, absolutely. And it's great.
And you have to watch it a few different times to realize it's like, no, it's a satire. And much like Fight Club, it's may or may not. You have to assume what may be in his head versus what actually did happen in some capacity, you know?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, when I saw that movie, I saw it with my buddy. Again, it was like right around college time. And we went during the day and we were literally the only two people in the theater watching this
thing. They probably got scared by it. They're like, is this a cheesy exploitation movie? No, but it is making fun of various kind of things. And yeah, if you're not paying sharp attention, you know, especially with the various close-ups, then you're gonna be lost.
Well, we didn't know if it was a gag, we didn't know what was going on, because yeah, we were scared and then we were laughing and it's like, wait, should we be laughing when there's a man with a chainsaw?
Yeah,
just, you know, dropping what I mean? It to kill somebody,
right?
Yeah,
when he throws the chainsaw. I
saw that movie alone, like by myself.
No, so kidding.
When I was in graduate school, I was super broke. Like I couldn't That's have a awesome. Job because I was in school. But my big thing that I would do was like go to Blockbuster once a month and rent like a couple movies and take them back and watch them by myself.
Yeah.
And American Psycho, I don't know why, but I picked that one. I knew nothing about it. I came home, I was watching it, and I'm like, what in the world is this? And I had no one to process it with me.
Right.
This is before the internet, when it's like, you pretty much were limited to just leave a review on a, you know, Amazon.
I mean, I did have internet, so this is probably like 2000 was when I saw it, so it's later. But it's the year it came out. So I guess it was 01, sometime around there. Mm-hmm. And I just had no clue what I was watching. And I wasn't like into chat rooms and things like this.
Yeah.
That were a thing then, so that I could jump on and be like, can somebody just hold my hand and explain this to me?
Right. Please work with me here. Yeah.
Yeah. We watched it again together later. And that's one that you really do have to rewatch, I think, to kind of get the second or third layer of what he's doing and everybody in the movie is doing. Because Jared Leto,
yeah,
Willem Dafoe, totally.
And all his roles kind of echo one another. Like, I don't think, had he not done a voiceover for Pocahontas and then been in the New World or even Little Women, I don't think if he hadn't done any of those period piece or war type movies, I don't think he would have been in Rescue Dawn, Hostiles, or even The Promise. And yeah. What's the other one he did that no one saw? The Flowers of War. Yeah, it's just like, yeah.
I saw that. That was a heavy duty film.
That was very brutal. Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, oh.
I definitely did not see it. And
yeah.
John, actually, we were going through the filmography and he read that one. I'm like, I didn't know that one. And he started telling me what it's about. And I'm like, you know what? Let's just save that for later. I'm going to pass.
The trailer was very deceptive. It was like, yeah, no, I love this filmmaker. I think it's well-intended, but I can't recommend this movie.
it's so harsh. Oh, man.
Yeah.
It's really well done. But
He does a lot of drama stuff. So
war movies in general, like, it's hard to recommend them all because some of them is like, well, I think it's well made and got some good themes, and there's other ones it's like, and it's kind of hard to decipher from all the other ones that are coming out. You know, it just
sure
literally does become noise after a while.
Yeah, and I mean, but then you see him do something like totally different. Like, I feel like American Hustle was a movie that was really different because it was really funny. Like, yeah. He was funny in it.
And both that and when he played Dick Cheney, he basically had to wear a fat suit.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Well, actually, no, he got big for that.
I think he really gained a lot of
weight. He put on 40 pounds for that, and he shaved his eyebrows, and he shaved his head. That's the way they could put everything on him.
He looked nuts when he was in Vice. I thought, what's happening? Like, he looked totally crazy.
And everyone kind of forgot he had been in The Big Short just because he's just a supporting character, and is like, oh, so now he's the Adam McKay guy. Take a guy who can do satire.
Yeah, and he was really crazy as Dick Cheney. It was a really weird role, but he was very good.
It was scary. Yeah, when he just takes over.
Oh yeah.
Everything's just all good.
Yeah.
Trust me. The voice. Trust me,
it's all fine. We're just gonna impressive. Go home and we're gonna eat and nothing we can do. Start a war.
But he said the Oval Office just laying down how things are gonna be run. And it's just like, you know, he is the vice president, but he has all the power.
Yeah.
In the world. Yeah, that was, it was terrifying.
It was.
And then he's telling his daughter, who's, you know, out of the closet, oh, well, they don't hate you. I'll always love you. It's just like, no, that doesn't work.
He was, man, yeah, that was, well, because, you know, we saw what? We saw W years earlier.
Yeah.
You know, the Oliver Stone movie. And I remember that.
Richard Dreyfuss, I think.
Yes, Richard Dreyfuss.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a weird choice. I don't even remember.
They were very odd choices, and some of them worked, and some, like Jeffrey Wright as Colin Powell, that made sense to me. But yeah, then there were other ones where it's like, Oliver, and why did you pick these guys?
Yeah. Well, he's never been exactly what I would call normal with any of his choices either.
No. So,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when I think back on these Christian Bale movies, I gotta tell you, the Equilibrium performance is the one I always go back to. I don't know why, because I mean, he's done things that I feel are a lot more demanding, but just the stunt work that he did, particularly in that one scene with the guns, where it was just, it looked like he actually went, did all these gun movements, and then flipped up in the air like Matrix style. Well, I always think of that,
and that was around that time too. Yeah, that was a movie that we saw. We had no knowledge of what it
both
was.
Fell for the cracks. Disney did not make good use of them, and yeah, it's just like, yeah. I mean, with Reign of Fire, it was just a fun, just apocalyptic movie working with then unknown Gerard Butler and
Rising
Star. My favorite character in that. I love Creedy. He's
once awesomest. Again, he's the straight face, but yeah, Equilibrium. Yeah, he pretty much. Kurt Wimmer, who had worked on all kinds of movies, Street Kings, Salt, and Spear, and Law Abiding Citizen. Yeah, he pretty much at that point he just wanted to craft a 1984 almost V for Vendetta esque kind of movie. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was really pretty cool, but I felt like when we watched it again, I felt like they kind of lost what they were trying to do at some point, because like they're supposed to just have no emotions, but there's people who clearly have emotions, like
pretty much
not, you know, if they may not be getting sad or getting happy, but they do have like schadenfreude, like
yeah, it's not perfect, but it is just for a fun blockbuster movie. This is like it'll I mean, it can't be Brave New World or even what's the other one, Fahrenheit 451, but yeah, it's pretty much going in that same realm, and it's trying
to make the Matrix a really good job of it, and for it to not be, I don't think we had heard of it when we went to see it. We used to, around that time, we would just go to the movies, and if there was something we hadn't seen, we were going to watch it. So I think that's how we ended up there, and we were like, wow, that was surprising and good. And we watched that one a few times.
Well, any science fiction, I'm always ready to go.
Yeah,
you know, that's the thing. And so we've seen some pretty out there movies over time.
I mean,
and it just didn't have a chance. I mean, he was sharing the money, appearing in that back to back with those other movies, and then a art house film, Laurel Canyon. But yeah, it's like it was just gonna get dominated by Minority Report or even Cypher, you know, two other cyberpunkish, you know.
Yeah.
And back with Reign of Fire, that the dragon,
yes,
the effects and that are kind of amazing.
Yeah,
for the time.
I mean, still today, I'm just like, I don't know how they created it, but it's like they kind of went with a Jurassic Park approach. It's like, show it when you need to show it without it being just a bad, you know, like Godzilla knockoff, you know.
But yeah, when you look back normally at these effects heavy movies from the early aughts, you can really kind of see,
oh yeah,
you know what's happening. But with that, it was like better than Game of Thrones level, or at least on Game of Thrones level, like much more recent dragon stuff that looked really good.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But yeah, I liked that movie.
Sci-Fi Channel, you know.
Yeah, exactly. But I liked that movie. I mean, it's not the best movie in the world or something, but we like Riff Tracks and Love. Mystery Science Theater 3000. Oh,
yeah. There is a hysterical one, and they kind of embrace the over-the-topness of it after a while.
The Reign of Fire Riff Tracks is fantastic. So,
Yeah. And plus, you got to love Apocalyptic Future, where people's idea of entertainment is recreating Star Wars with puppets.
Yeah. Oh, man. I mean, you know, that definitely would happen. So
it would have to eventually. I would buy that. No one wants to do Grimm's fairy tales. No.
Well, I got to tell you, like, when I was looking at clips of The Machinist today, and The Machinist, I remember seeing it as soon as it came on home video. And it was just so terrifying to watch that emaciated body that, like, yeah. I immediately sold the DVD.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we got it. We bought it. You're so excited. We watched it once, and it was just like, this poor guy.
I mean, it was disturbing to see. Like, he does these transformations, and that one was just something. I mean, he did a lot of really weird movement in that too.
Are you familiar with Brett Anderson's work prior to this? He had done Session 9 and The Call with Halle Berry. So
Session 9.
I feel like we saw Session 9. Yeah.
Years ago. But this is like, he's just one of those. He just always just kind of just has this slow pace to kind of just, you're just waiting for someone to just break. Just
Yeah,
and he was like scrubbing the floor with bleach, I believe, at one point.
Or what he thinks is bleach.
Yeah. Oh my god! And the overhead shot of his body, and just you saw his spinal column, and it was
Yeah, he just that's a wild movie.
So, how do you think he plays to the camera? Well, like, how does he? Is it just how he looks around, or is it more just kind of just silent, moody, just being static, even?
Well, that's okay. This is very interesting because I was really curious, you know, what makes him so amazing? Because I'm an actor and I've done a lot of television. The thing you probably would recognize me from, I was on Criminal Minds. I was a bartender on Criminal Minds. Yeah, that was awesome. then I was on Mark Maron's show on IFC. I got to do a scene with Mark Maron, which was great. Workaholics on Comedy Central. And then the thing that people seem to recognize me from the most was something where I wasn't credited and I had no lines. I was on the first episode of Superstore and I just got a whole bunch of ice cream.
Yeah, he's just like grabbing like 5 or 6 gallons of ice cream out of the cooler, which is, you know, method acting for John.
Sweet. It's on brand. Yeah. So it's like, so I watch all these performances and like, I want to learn because I feel like the way that I learn is by watching, you know, these masters, and this guy is a master. So, okay. So I was watching a particular scene from Out of the Furnace today, and I don't want to give any spoilers in case people haven't seen it, but his entire focus was in his eyes. There was this honesty that he was able to give through his eyes. And then actually, literally, it was kind of the top of his torso, the way he stiffened it up. This guy he really knows how to manipulate his body. Like, I'll watch, like, he can just slightly move his jaw and everything. His silences. Okay, I found this interesting too. He said, I'll have a lot of scripts where I have a lot of silences, and he'll actually write down all of his thoughts. So he said that it makes it a lot more precise when they're shooting it. So he's going through, you know, Jim sees his father die. Jim remembers the time they went to the baseball game. And so it's like he really makes it so you can see straight into him. And it's really the biggest thing is his eyes. And it's like, if you watch his eyes, you're knocked out. And the other actors, because I was like, ooh, okay, let's see what other actors have to say about him. So I'm like, I need to know. And like Tom Hardy talked about when he was Bane being scared of Christian Bale.
Really?
When he was in the Batman suit looking at him. He was like, oh my God, it's on.
Huge as Bane. Like, he was like big and tough. But I mean, honestly,
it's a good question because we don't really find out even until years later, you know, who's good but requires assistance. Like, you know, Marlon Brando is good but requires cue cards, you know, and then
Yeah. Well, but I think really the eyes thing
is great, but people hate working with because they argue or something, you know, you don't know. And it's like you say, yeah, that, he basically, yeah, it seems like he just has a certain look to him. And obviously Scott Cooper and Adam McKay were going to get along with him because, you know, Christian likes, I think he said in an interview, especially around Psycho time, he likes taking absurdism or tricky roles, and satire is definitely a tricky thing. So that makes sense for McKay. But yeah, as Cooper, he was an actor before he became just a director and writer.
Yes. And that's so, what he said made the set so good, is because Scott Cooper creates this ideal environment that actors would want to be in. And it was like, wow, okay. So it's like a fun time to be in the sandbox, because you have someone that has the knowledge of the other side and can really work with you.
But like, his ability to just act through his eyes only actually kind of makes him a perfect choice for Batman, because so much of the time, in that when he's not Bruce Wayne and is Batman,
I bet you there's got to be some track with Nolan saying, you know? That's why I picked him, you know.
I bet. I mean,
because he's got like a little bit of chin and a mouth and just eyes, and other than that you aren't really seeing much, but he's able to convey so much through that, and it's pretty impressive. Well, and the voice, of course, in that too.
Yeah, it's, yeah, you don't forget that. And it's, but it's, I think that the moments that stand out to me the most are the silent ones, where he's just,
well, that's what I liked about his performance in 310 to Yuma, that, you know, he does have all these people around him who are doing bigger stuff, but at the same time he has like this, he's kind of like the still center of that movie.
Yeah,
like it can't, these other people can't do what they're doing if he's not holding it up, like the pillar. You know,
well, I mean, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Just even with, I mean, like it or hate it movies like Public Enemies, you know, he's having to play off Johnny Depp, and then, you know, Terminator Salvation, he's having to play off Sam Worthington and all these visual effects, you know. So it's just like, for both of them, I kind of feel like he's still kind of in Dark Knight mode. He tries to make it different enough with how he's speaking, but he's still kind of just being gruff, you know. So,
yeah, I think that in The Prestige also, I think.
Well, and I think by that point. Yeah, I mean, he pretty much, I think from that point on, just, I don't think he fired an agent or anything, but I think at that point on, he's like, okay, but I don't want people to just see me as just, you know, Batman. So I think David O. Russell was a good escape for him, as nutty as that guy's known to be. Yeah, I think that was just what he needed. He needed some other kind of important all-star cast kind of role.
Yeah, well, and he got a chance to really do more. Like, we haven't even talked about The Fighter yet.
Well, that's kind of what the lead up right here. That's his first David O. Russell experience, and that's what got him.
And I wasn't surprised by that, because I had actually seen like a YouTube clip, and he and Marky Mark were actually going to like the same gym, and this was like in 2002.
Like, wow.
And it's just like, it's wild.
Well, no, keep going.
I forget what movie it was that he was on the set of, but I think it was just like some, it might have been during Batman, or I don't know, after Shaft, I don't know. But I don't know if it's still on YouTube anymore, but there's something for it somewhere. But yeah, so when I saw him in The Fighter together, I was like, yeah, that makes sense. Clearly somewhere along the way Marky Mark was maturing and saying, I don't want to be Marky Mark anymore. And I think he had worked with Russell, so that made sense that they might have just said, hey, if you really want a powerhouse actor, this is dude I know, it's Christian Bale.
Well, it's, I mean, that's the, what I learned today, because I was watching this interview. It was like a round table with David O. Russell, Mark Wahlberg, Christian Bale, and Charlie Rose. Mark Wahlberg said that he had actually been trying to get The Fighter going for like 4 or 5 years.
That makes better sense. There you go.
Yeah. Like, it was a long time. And they had, like, Darren Aronofsky was attached. And then I think around the time Christian Bale came on is where Darren Aronofsky exited. And
that would have been a different movie. Well, he ended up being The Wrestler, right?
Yeah, he made The Wrestler. Yeah. Another. That's amazing.
That is a great movie.
The Resurrection of Mickey Rourke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty much where it makes sense how, as like what everyone does, they basically, movies become different movies. And the fact that Ford versus Ferrari for years was some Michael Mann project, and then he's basically doing his own version with someone else, like Hugh Jackman, I guess, in the part or something like that. But I don't think he's focusing on it now. But yeah, he reunited with And Mann dropped out and was credited as a producer because he contributed. But yeah, Mangold from Pretend to Yuma united with him for that one. So
yeah, John actually auditioned for Ford versus Ferrari.
Yeah,
he didn't get it, but he had an audition for a little announcer part in that, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Oh, so when you've been on set, have you kind of just noticed how, I mean, you know, they're very quick, fast paced, you know, work schedules, you know?
Oh yeah. Time is really a factor. I mean, they want you to move as fast as they can.
The minute they hear about anyone misbehaving, you know, it's like, okay, shut down for the day. Let's get some pickups, you know?
Oh yeah. Look, that's, I've seen nothing like that. What I've seen anytime I've been on a set, and I've been on, like I said, primarily television, and I've been in some features too. Yeah. I mean, there's no time. There's no time to argue. Straight from one thing to the other. There could be a disagreement, like, you know, the yell cut, and maybe an actor is like, hey, you know, I like that. Or the director's like, no, I didn't like that. And maybe, yeah, you know, quick back and forth, but then they're back in. Like
something like Criminal Minds has been on for so long. By the time you were on like the second last season or something.
Yeah.
So that was like a well-oiled machine at that point.
Yeah.
And they really just had it down to a science, you know. But then absolutely, when you were in a feature, that you were in recently that you shot in October, we can't actually say what it is.
All good. And I was actually going to lead into that. It is interesting how a lot of the casting calls will be very secretive. You know, it's like,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
I was on an episode of Cheaters, of all things. And this is like, it wasn't called that. It was called, you know, like, untitled, you know, dating show, and it's like, yeah, dating.
How did dating. It go? Tell us about it. How did it go? It's exciting.
Best time of my life on a professional set. And I've been on extras on plenty of other TV shows that I was very disappointed by how they were run and actually the actual content. But this one, that was like the easiest, like $200 I made for the day. This
is nice. That's
just awesome. And because we had to be on our level, like we were warned, is like, you got to say these kinds of insults, these kind of retorts. And you know, I got my friend that helped me get on there. He's playing, you know, the normal guy who wants to kick my ass. I'm playing the douchebag who's like stolen his love. And it was just fun just to have to, I basically was playing a method actor who is very controlling of his girlfriend, and I'm attacking him with a samurai sword, and it was a hoot. It was just hysterical, and I loved how they warned us. And Clark Gable III, and yes, he's related, and overdosed recently, so they're getting the old host back. But basically,
oh wow,
he's just like, basically they're telling me all this stuff to say to him, and I just loved his retort. He's like, that's the stupidest fucking thing you could ever say. He's like, I'm just saying what he told me to say.
that's really character. Good.
Those things where you're like improvising are crazy. John has a ton of YouTube hits on some clip.
Yeah,
Operation Repo.
Yeah, John did
Oh my God. Yeah, I'm on there, and it was just like, that was like one of the wildest experiences.
That was crazy. Well, the reason is because the guy you're in the scene with like has died.
Yeah, he has passed away. So Carlos.
And a lot of people were like going online watching clips of that guy.
Yeah.
And John happened to have one up or something. So everybody's come to watch this clip, and it's really terrible. Like, no offense.
No, listen. I mean, it was really fun because it was all improvisation.
Yeah, and you were just supposed to be cursing and yelling and getting in a fight. So it's about as bad as it can be.
Well, it was at first. I was supposed to be a guy stealing water, and I did it like really sympathetic, like a nice person at first, and the, like, the director's like, no, he's like, I want you to be the nastiest, most evil person ever.
Oh my God, that's what they go for. Just like,
when we first got to LA and you started like getting jobs, they were pretty much all like that. It was like he was in A Thousand Ways to Die.
Oh yeah,
playing a guy who inspects hotels, and he got stung to death by scorpions.
Yeah,
that's amazing. I mean,
we were at McDonald's, and then he got recognized from that. That was actually funny.
Isn't that amazing, though? It'll happen. Where it's just like, yeah,
it's like
people watch everything.
These people were in line behind us. It was like teen kids, and they were looking at John and laughing and pointing. And we're like, and John at first is like, what are these people doing? And then we realized that they were laughing because they knew him from the show. They're like, were you in Thousand Ways to Die? And he was like, yeah. And they loved it. So it was awesome.
What if I say no? Will you believe me then?
It's like, you know, talking about Christian Bale is great because it's like that's, you know, that's the dream. You know what I mean? That's like the level, you know, that you want to hit. And like, oh, here's something that's really wild, right? So he goes to all these extremes. He really goes for it. And he doesn't like to be called a method actor because he'll say,
oh, really?
Yes, he'll say, I didn't study Stanislavski. And they're like, well, what's your method? And he's like, I just kind of wing it. Like, honest to God, I watched an interview today. I'm like, this guy's awesome. He's like,
but I think he studied at RADA or something when he was a kid. And I mean, he's been an actor since he was a child.
Yeah, because I mean, Empire of the Sun is like 1987.
Yeah, and he was, I mean, he already was so good in that. It was like he's just a tiny adult.
Yeah.
You know, he's like wise beyond his years almost in that.
I mean, to be that good, I mean, it's.
Yeah.
I mean, that's wild.
And like, Henry V.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was just a boy, but he's working with Kenneth Branagh. And that's got to be interesting.
Yeah. I haven't even seen that whole movie, though. I'm ashamed. I'm a Shakespearean. I have a master's
degree. I'll try to retry watching it one more time, but it's pretty long.
Well, I've never read Henry V either. I've read like out of Shakespeare's plays. I've probably read like 35 of them. I'm missing just a few. And that is one of them, and it's a really well-known play, so I just don't know how I've never watched it or read it. It's really weird.
I did a monologue from it once, but I've never...
I mean, most everybody has... Anytime another Shakespearean is talking to me and they realize I haven't seen or read that, they're like, shame.
Shame.
For shame.
It's old Christian Bale shows up just like, I remember, I think he just comes down some stairs.
Yeah.
And it's just like from the first second I saw him in that movie, because I've seen like the beginning and I saw him and he had a few lines and he plays like Robin.
Little drummer boy.
Yeah. It's, you know, and it's just like he comes in and it's like you have all these huge people in it, like Judi Dench is in it. And it's like this little kid comes in and then he just blows the doors off of everything that's happening. And I was like, okay, this guy is
someone must have seen something back to back with Empire of the Sun. I mean, that had to be enough favors you need.
Yeah. I mean, and then I really didn't see like most of the stuff he was in between that and Little Women for me. I actually never saw Newsies. Somehow
it's good, like, but yeah, I used to get it mixed up with Swing Kids. They're just both so similar, but
they came like so soon together too.
Yeah, crime drama.
Swing Kids I haven't seen in so long, and I used to love it. I remember when that
came out. He's so built with all that boxing in it. It's like, oh my god, so no wonder he was asked to be a physically challenged actor, you know.
The shape that he gets in to go up and down. I mean, wow.
Yeah, I don't
but yeah, Newsies, so many music numbers and just, you know, playing off an ensemble. So it's like, yeah.
Well, did you ever see Mary, Mother of Jesus, where he plays Jesus?
Mm-hmm.
You did. Tell us about it.
So I think, you know, playing opposite Deborah Messing, you know, for an NBC featured, you know, Hallmark produced movie before Hallmark was kind of being lampooned. It was a big giant scale TV event. And I think, I mean, Jeremy Sisto did it as well. But so I think it just, any actor just realizes like, regardless of where this is going, it's like, you are front and center. So you've got to be on your game. And I think definitely a lot of back to back with all of those. We've heard about his just, you know, over the top reaction on Terminator. But I mean, other than that, I think every role he brought to, he just realizes like, I can't let anyone down. I can't suck in anything. I can't, phone it in.
I just love that he played Jesus and then immediately Patrick Bateman after that.
Totally.
Gotta make a complete 180.
So every crowd has seen him in some way, whether it's a blockbuster crowd, art house crowd, or even a religious crowd. It's like everybody's seen him, you know, some capacity.
Well, the Midsummer Night's Dream.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I actually really enjoyed that movie.
It's a fun and campy escapade, yeah.
It's a great, you know, I mean, that play is just like that. And I think it really captures the spirit of the play. And the four kind of lover characters are just nearly interchangeable, which they should be. But he's really funny with Calista Flockhart.
I'm sure he got fan mail from that one. Oh yeah.
And he's like super naked, like later on at the end.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. But that was a really good movie. I like Kevin Kline in that.
Kevin Kline, yes.
Is the man. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, he's great, great, great. But yeah, it was good to see a good Shakespeare production, because sometimes I have to watch some really crappy ones.
Yep. It wasn't Cymbeline, that is for sure. Yep.
Oh boy, don't even get me started. I saw on John Leguizamo when he talked about that after the fact, I was like, whoa, no.
Oh, really?
Yeah, know. He was just like saying that it was the best Shakespeare adaptation of all time or something.
Well, and I'm maybe like, intended,
I hope
but
they gave him a bonus for that.
Maybe they gave him a little extra. I wanted to show it to someone in college, a film professor, is like, look at this. They're doing everything you told us not to do. They're having static shots. You can't see who's talking when they're talking. This is just an awkward production with some that you'll still want to see much once, just because, again, how can you not? It's a dynamite cast, and it's like, it's all wasted on an abysmal crime tell. And fortunately, I guess Bell must be really extremely picky. I think he just really says, is like, I gotta know someone. I gotta trust him. I gotta commit to this if I'm gonna have to put on a bunch of pounds and then lose it, you know?
Yes.
Well, and it's like now, like for it was Vice, he said that he actually used a nutritionist to manage the weight.
Makes you wonder, machinist too, but
makes you wish he had done that to begin with. He probably wouldn't have gone as insane, you know.
I don't know. Oh man. Well, he said in an interview I saw today for Machinist, he's like, yeah, I just smoked cigarettes and drank whiskey, and I just had one apple a day. And that's how I got my weight down.
Sugar. Yeah.
Not worth it.
Oh, man. Yeah. I mean, I was just like, oh, I mean, yeah. I mean, that's going for it. And he said that at the time he was doing it, he thought that he hadn't gone far enough with the weight loss.
Oh, my God, dude. And,
right. Like, how much further could he go? He says, now I look back and he's like, I don't know what I was thinking. Yeah.
Well, it's like almost like that he gave himself anorexia because. Mm.
Exactly. Like maybe diabetes, like almost. Yeah.
Yeah. That's like the thought you have when you're anorexic, is that you can always be thinner.
Yeah.
Well, and just because someone else does it doesn't mean you should do it. Just because Justin Hoffman, you know, goes on sleep deprivation, or, you know, Robert De Niro starves himself, doesn't mean you should.
Yeah. I'd go with the Laurence Olivier when he told Dustin Hoffman he should have just acted instead. He's like, oh, I haven't slept for 24 hours. It's like, oh, I just act.
Yeah.
If I just act like I haven't slept for 24 hours, I don't have to do it.
Yeah. I remember that was in college. They talked about the tri-acting thing, because it was just like, yeah. But then it was just like, do you know what's funny about that? Okay, so, you know, we hear that. And then, you know, the next scene that goes up, it was like some really intense love scene. And this dude, like, was literally full force slamming his head into the wall.
Oh, my God, stop.
Yeah, and it was just like,
Nothing is worth it like that.
That was totally wild.
You were in, like, a short movie. John was in a short, like, I don't know, 6 years ago.
Yeah.
And you were, like, hammering on a door, like, to get in. And your hand still hurts. And you're like, why did I do that?
It's, right? You're like, I want to be the best.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's like,
well, best of the best,
right? No, yeah, like I want to be like Eric Roberts in Best of the Best. Really, what I want.
I can't be Stallone in Rocky, but maybe he could. I don't know.
Maybe I could be Stallone in Over the Top. You know what I mean? And that.
Oh God! How campy does Christian Bale want to be?
Oh my God! What if Christian Bale was in Over the Top? What if they remade it?
That would be perfect. A remake of Expendables.
He's in the Expendables. Like, Christian Bale is Rambo. This is kind of fun.
I love it.
I would watch it.
Great idea.
Will Smith will be Terry Crews' character.
Nice.
Yeah, like an A-list Expendables.
The Killables. Yeah. I don't
know. I think that would be good. What if he was Freddy Krueger? Now that I bet you would be scary.
That would be scary. I mean, it's
one of the killers in Scream, something.
He's gonna give it 100%, so.
Yeah,
well, I would see Christian Bale in pretty much anything, I guess.
there's, I'm trying to think, like, you know, a killer. So, I mean, we have American Psycho, but
Seven could have been fun.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. Oh man. Oh, man.
Oh, man. That would have been disturbing.
Oh, man. Like,
even any other just revenge or crime thriller would have been more interesting. The Watcher, Men on Fire, Taken.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. If he was in movies like that, that would be super cool.
Yeah. Wow. Or if, what if he was in like that Liam Neeson movie where he's like the plow guy, except like Christian Bale was the plow guy? What was that movie?
The snowplow movie.
Yeah, what was that movie?
Oh, the remake of that Stellan Skarsgård movie, Cold Pursuit. So there you go.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes. I mean, well, so the thing that we got, you know, that like I'm excited about, right, is we got more David O. Russell coming, right? I guess. Am I looking at this?
Yeah, it says he has a David O. Russell.
The Scott movie Cooper
coming. The Scott Cooper movie coming.
The Scott Cooper one, man. That's I don't know. That's Scott Cooper, like, you know, because he did Crazy Heart.
Oh my God, the people in the news. Mm-hmm. In this new David O. Russell are crazy.
Well, who do we got?
Anya Taylor-Joy, Margot Robbie,
yes.
Timothy Olyphant, Zoe Saldana.
Wow.
Michael Shannon.
Yes.
My boy Michael Shannon.
Shannon's probably gonna creep him out.
Yeah. Oh my God! What if they face off?
Yeah,
oh my
God! Interesting.
What would happen?
I don't know, because you saw that thing that said Joaquin Phoenix was saying he was afraid of talking to Christian Bale because he just admires him so much.
Right.
I would have thought that the two of them would have been, you know, they can't occupy the same space, like in Time Cop, where like you.
Oh, if you're in this, God.
If you occupy
Demolition
the same
Man.
Space,
you know? Man.
Like, I feel like there's Joaquin Phoenix is like so intense, and Christian Bale is so intense. Michael Shannon also super intense.
Like Michael Shannon and Christian Bale, like if you just set them like, I don't know, 3 feet from each other,
you're gonna see who breaks first.
Yeah,
I don't know. Staring contest.
Or what if they just are like when you put Furbies together and they just talk in their special language, and you can't be a part of that.
No, that would be maybe. Like, maybe they just stand there for like, I don't know, 3 weeks, and then they just kind of smile and they go, "Good job,
good job,
good job."
Matthias Schoenaerts, that's a lot of people in that movie.
Oh, Schoenaerts. What about as one of the assholes in the next season of Ray Donovan? Leave Schreiber and him face off.
Oh, Schreiber. That dude scares me. Yeah, he's good.
John auditioned for that show too.
Didn't happen.
Sweet.
Didn't happen. Hey. Yeah.
Another announcer role though. They keep wanting you to be one. They got to cast you in one.
They brought me in for twice for that. One was for an announcer. One was to work as a guy behind a fast food counter.
Those are two very different things. I don't.
You should be an announcer on Eric Andre if he comes back.
Oh, that would be great.
There's a different kind of intense.
It's like, hello!
Oh my gosh. Yeah. No, Liev Schreiber is very good. Him and Christian Bale are similarly intense. I mean, I guess that's one of the things we really like in an actor.
Mm-hmm.
It's like this super intense, like, you know, just mood that they bring to things.
Totally.
Yeah.
Well, he can, yeah, because it's kind of like an Al Pacino thing, like Godfather, right? Because it's like you see that a lot in Hostels, is he's got all of this fire right beneath the surface, and he's barely containing it, but you're watching him contain it, and you can tell, you know, he's working to keep it there, and it can come out at any second.
Yeah, I mean, he's so angry in Hostels, and it's so awesome.
Yeah, like when he has that scene with Bill Camp at the beginning.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah.
He's working off of West Studi. I mean, there's another powerhouse.
Yeah, it's so good.
I want to watch that again. Like we
still
just
on
got,
Netflix.
Like,
yeah.
Well, dude, we just got a 4K TV for Christmas.
Oh.
And we bought Hostel streaming prior to the TV. And now, and like, it was like we got it on like Vudu. So it had
a fun
4K.
Movie test out session. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be
good. It's
going to
look great because the set and that is awesome. Like the setting.
Yeah.
I can't wait to watch that. We should go watch that later.
I never saw the Mowgli movie.
No, I didn't.
I was already jungle booked out. There had already been like two other ones that same time. I'm like,
That's how I felt too.
And I can't blame him. I get it. Money and motion capture, and it's the thing everyone's doing. So he probably just said, hey, again, just another ensemble production. Something my kids can watch.
Well, yeah. And he, I mean, this is another thing we were talking about. When you're an actor, you're always unemployed.
Yeah.
So you kind of got to make hay while the sun shines. Like, if you can get a role that like might as well go for it. And his voice is cool. So use it, make some cash off of it.
Do it.
Yeah. He's, he's, I don't know. So, I mean, we, you know, really. So
would he rank in your top 100, obviously, but would he rank in your top 10?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we have said at some points that we think he's maybe in the greatest actors of his kind of generation, which is also ours. He's just maybe like.
Yeah, I can't think of a time where someone doesn't want to see somebody's in. Very minor. Yeah. And if I've seen anyone hate on him, it's been people who didn't care for the Dark Knight movies, but I've never seen, or Terminator, but I've never seen anyone who's just like, for the most part, is like, oh, that's overrated.
Yeah, no, I mean, I can see a movie that he's in that I don't particularly like, but it's never because of him. Like, there's never a time when he's the reason I don't like the movie.
Giving it too much.
Yeah, he's always just good. He's always good in everything. And I think, you know, he's, he's just a really good actor. I think it's hard to say, like, who's your top, you know, five or ten of all
so many
time
to pick,
but I gotta say he's bound to be in my top 10 of all time.
I would even go top five. Sweet.
I think that's safe to say too, because he's just that good, and he really does have a range. He can do a lot of different things, and I'm looking forward to seeing him even stretch that range even more, you know, as he gets older and maybe takes himself even less seriously. You know,
I don't think he's ever going to get to where he's like Tom Cruise level, where he's just on intentional parody and everyone wants to make fun of, you know, he can do the work, but he loves to jump off of buildings. I don't think he's ever going to get to that kind of level where people are divided on him. And I'm, you know, other than, again, those just difficult, you know, in person moments, I've never seen anyone just say he was impossible as a whole to work with. And I think, after Salvation, I think he also learned, hey, I'm going to stop trying to sneak into the editing room and mess with my performance and everything. I think he dialed down the ego after a while. I think he really did.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, I think people also just tend to just be a little overcritical about somebody who gets angry one time, you know, and then it's just like, oh, you know, he's.
Yeah, that's true too. You don't know how much of it is, you know, like. And that's where I am with any celebrity, you know, if it's more than just the makeup, you know, and wardrobe, you know, because they can always be kind of anal retentive, is like, if it's more than them complaining, then something's up, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, he handled the rant being publicized pretty well.
Yeah, he
honestly.
Came on TV and he said, yeah, he goes, it was inexcusable. It was awful.
Yeah, that, I mean, he apologized and he knew, you know, he went overboard.
And I know he was unhappy with the final movie, so it just got to where he's just like, hey, you know, I think he also learned is like every person matters, the editor, the cameras, the sets, and last thing he needs to do is cause a scene or even just in general, just like, you know, every actor matters and so many actors like, Terry Crews were pissed off that, you know, their part got mostly edited out of the movie. He's just a dead body in the final cut. You know?
And well, so, and that happens too. And you just never know. I mean, yeah. I was talking about Thin Red Line being one of my favorite movies. And there were so many people who during the filming kind of thought they were the star of the movie. Mm-hmm. And then later, you know, got cut down. Their part was so small that they were shocked because
it's hard to tell people that you're doing something important when they just seem to think, you know, just small or big. And it's just like, you just don't know. You might still be big in it or commonly seen throughout the movie, but you only talk in one scene, you know, you don't know. So,
Well, and Malick is like famous for just shooting like so much footage and then having to cut so much down.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a real heartbreaker if you thought like, this is it, you know, this is it.
Yeah.
Oh,
well,
man.
That's the thing. Like he's in New World, Bale's in New World. But he's only in like a pretty limited amount.
I think he's in more of it in the extended cut, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. So
We have that, which I never opened. I bought Criterion for Georgia years ago.
You just got to really commit to watching that long of a movie.
That's late. Guys need a day off.
Exactly. Like, I have a job. I'm sorry. I cannot do this. I mean, there's times when we take vacation just to watch movies.
Oh, any of these shows that we review on here, I always make sure it's like, see you in 3 months. I'll watch 3 episodes a day. That's as good as I'm going to get. And I'm going to be taking notes while I'm doing it. And I really get annoyed because people say, oh, why are you taking out your phone? I'm like, I'm not checking Instagram. I'm not playing Candy Crush. I'm putting down notes. I want to know what episode they say that one awesome line, or, you know, that one betrayal happens, or that other iconic just moment happens, you know. And, you know, sometimes your notes are funny and you want to read them out loud, like, oh my God, so-and-so is playing a real bastard.
Well, yeah, you gotta keep track. It's like, yeah.
Even a Wicca will only tell you so much. And sometimes there'll be other theories that you gotta kind of spill the beans on. And, you know, people can tell if you were just only paying half attention to it. It's like, whoa, you didn't even mention this.
Yeah, well, and we only do one episode a week of our show so far.
Well, that does it too. Don't do too much. It's like, and
yeah,
no.
We wouldn't be able to. Yeah, I mean, I have a full-time job and a really long, unholy Los Angeles commute. So, you know, we have time to do just so much. And if I didn't take notes on things, we would be in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
I would just forget the entire movie between the time I watch it and the time we tape. Although we're trying to shorten that now.
Well, old me is like, you know, like I should say this way. Young me, I feel like sometimes is like yelling at old me, because young me literally remembered every detail of everything.
You did. I mean, even since I've known you, like your ability to recall,
graphic, man.
Yeah. Like movie stuff is like crazy. Like, you won't remember the name of someone you went to high school with. But you'll remember, like, who the key grip was on E.T. or something. I mean, like...
That's nice.
Yeah.
That's probably too specific, but...
You never know. It depends on the movie.
You don't know. You don't know. Well, you sit through the credits.
They're happy for your fanfare.
Right? Always going to do it. Yeah.
That's awesome. So I think this is a good place to wrap up. This was a hell of a time. So feel free to plug Comfort Food Films.
We do talk about food. Plenty of films
that'll make you hungry. Yep.
Well, yeah. So Comfort Films is our podcast. We're up to about 17 episodes at this point.
We've been
going since October. And basically what we talk about on our show is what we call the mac and cheese of movies. So it's the movies that we personally really love and keep rewatching over and over. Whether it's because they're just feel-good movies, or they give us nostalgia from when we were kids, like 80s. We're 80s kids, so we do a lot of 80s movies. Mm-hmm. Or if it's just something that we like, which is kind of offbeat, because sometimes we like a movie like Mad Max Fury Road, and we consider that a comfort movie when probably no one else would.
You never know, man. I mean, I grew up watching Mystery Science Theater, so what do I know?
Yes. Yeah,
exactly. We did too. We love that show. But yeah, so that's what we do on that. And we should be launching our website pretty soon. It'll be comfortfilmspodcast.com. Yes, definitely. We'll have some additional content there. So both of us do some writing, and we're planning to do some blog posts for each episode, so we can dig into some different things that we may not have discussed on the episode.
Awesome.
That's been a lot of fun. And yeah, so our episodes run usually about an hour to an hour and a half, and we just dig into these comfort films and decide, you know, what it is that we like about them, what is it that keeps us coming back. And yeah, we just have a lot of fun. John runs our Instagram account, which is Comfort Films Podcast.
Whoop, whoop.
And he does a ton of fun stuff over there, so definitely check it out.
Fun stuff.
Lots of polls. Yeah. Like,
I saw one of them. I was like, I couldn't believe the results.
Yeah. He put up Waterworld versus Aquaman, and I thought that was pretty
two different
inspired
kinds of cult movies. Yep.
But yeah, he puts up a lot of polls and a lot of great memes and things that are.
You should do Battlefield Earth or Gods of Egypt.
Oh, that's a goofy, bizarre movie. It's happening.
We love both of those.
Oh, yes. So.
Totally. It's just a,
they're great.
It's so rare that you see a mainstream movie just go apeshit. It's like, oh, man. I thought we'll it was just to rent a video, but nope.
We'll do that one for you next week. Like this week, we're planning to do our next episode is going to be on James Bond Casino Royale. We just watched No Time to Die again.
Yeah.
We'd seen it in the theater. We just watched it again at home. And we thought, hey, let's go back to Daniel Craig's first go round, which is my favorite Bond movie.
See how he evolved as an actor.
Yeah. Yeah. And so for that, we're going to do a fun little week of Bond brackets where we kind of put up the movies and see. What
on job or 006.
So we're gonna see what does everybody vote as like the best Bond movie overall over the course of the week.
Oh man, that's gonna be a hot take. Yeah, Bond fans gonna be rabid.
It's gonna be fun.
Yeah, it'll be really fun. So we're looking forward to that. And yeah, John's got some clips up on our YouTube channel. So we do video our show as well as audio record. So if you want to see our faces while we're being, and of course our beautiful closet in which we record our podcast.
Yes, yeah. You can see it now. You see,
hey, it's a cooler one than I got.
You know, we're lucky to have it because
persona.
We live in the middle of a pretty busy area, so if we didn't have this little interior closet, we'd be in trouble.
Oh.
Yeah, or gunshots
yes.
a lot of the time.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, it's a tough neighborhood.
Oh, boy. But, yeah, so that's us, Comfort Films Podcast. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, sort of.
Yeah, we got to get better on that.
We're old. We right? don't tweet that much. We got to get better on Twitter. But yeah, be sure to check us out on there. And then, of course, listen to our podcast wherever you find podcasts. We're on pretty much all those platforms. Yeah. Apple, Spotify, whatever.
Amazon,
Google, blah, 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 blah.
Tune in. Yeah, we're on everything. Yeah,
we're on those under Comfort Films Podcast. So.
And you can find us on IMDb. You know, George has got some credits on there. George
I've got
Macy.
A couple. John has a lot more than me.
John Macy.
And yeah, check
no
him out.
No relation to William H. Macy, but yeah, he's got no, some awesome you know. Comedy credits.
Although William H. Macy's daughter's name is Georgia, yeah. So there is Georgia. Another. But they have no E. We're M-A-C-E-Y. And every time we spell her last name, we definitely stress the E.
Well, it's the joke in my family always was, you know, we got the E, they got the money.
You got the B, they got the E.
That's good. We could get it.
We got it.
That'll be your theme song for season three.
It's gonna happen. Awesome. Well, I enjoy your song, by the way. Jacked up.
Thank you. Yes, that was not easy to compose, and then it was just getting a steady list of guesses. Like, okay, guys, no show. And what do you want to do?
Yeah, when we put ours together, I play guitar, and I just went. Da, 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 and that's our entire so that's our yeah. entire podcast song that everybody's probably sick of hearing at this point, so I'll have to change that up, learn an extra chord.
But if
point.
They complain, at least you'll know that they're listening. It's like, why, thank you. Thank Mr. you. Captain exactly. Obvious, now would you care to actually chime in and help? Does your brother know someone else who has a garage band who can do something awesome?
Exactly. Expanding our horizons.
Always. Mm-hmm. Always.
Yeah, so that's us, and that's what
this
we do.
This is us. That is them.
And we're so happy that we got a chance to jump on with you and talk about Christian Bale.
Yes, like, thank you.
You guys like we said, you know, before we started recording, I think we were saying, you know, Christian Bale is one of our favorite actors, but he kind of doesn't really show up too much on what we do at our show. Mm-hmm. He's not in a lot of what we would call comforting films, but we still love him.
Yeah, always. I mean, like I said, it's always a pleasure to watch.
Frisky Dawn might work, even though concerning what it considers, that's a pretty easygoing movie.
Yeah, like Steve Zahn, he's a real riot in that. You know what I mean? It's just a good time.
That flowers,
a couple of dudes.
That Flowers of the Sun or whatever is never going to show up.
Right.
Flowers of War. Yeah.
Whatever it's called, I again don't care because you told me what it's about, and I'm just checking right out.
Yeah. Yeah, it's heavy. Yeah,
pretty heavy.
Yeah.
Thank you all. Thank you. Owned completely.
Thank you. This was great.
Knock them dead.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll do it again sometime.
Absolutely. Any other subject is chime in, say, yeah, well, however you're going to do this. Let's do
this. Yeah, man.
Awesome. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Just remain safe out there.
You too.
You too.
Bye-bye. Good night.
I'm in the thick of it.
We'll return after these messages.
Hey, feeling down? Feeling low? Not enough podcasts about movies in your life? Why not try?
They must be destroyed on sight!
The new podcast cure-all, sure to get you right with the world and on a path to better living. We have exploitation, we have Italian horror, we have zombies, we have slashers, we have crime films, we have spaghetti westerns, we even have sci-fi and sex comedies. So take a dose of...
They must be destroyed on sight!
As needed, and let the hosts, Lee Russell, Daniel Harper, Paul Romali, and the odd guest host cure what ails you.
Warning, may cause atrophy, African consumption, black fever, bone shave, chin puff, colic, cramp colic, dropsy of the brain, elephantitis, grocer's itch, jaundice, mania, miasma, mortification, palsy, Pott's disease, rheumatism, scurvy, St. Anthony's fire, summer complaint, and worm fit in some people. Consult a physician before listening.
Did you ever see a film at such a young age it left you traumatized with cinematic wounds?
Necrophilia.
It's a dead issue, man. Don't push it. Cinema Psyops is a weekly podcast documenting an ongoing experiment on the mind of an unwilling test subject.
No one should have to watch this movie.
Oh, no one should have to watch this?
No one should have to watch this movie.
Surprisingly, it's not a topic that a lot of people really want to tackle.
I'm shocked, prudes.
I know, really.
Right?
It's the next sexual frontier that no one wants to explore.
I am, in the most sincerest of senses, disappointed in you.
It takes a powerful goddess like Connie, jam her arm down the monster's throat and kill it. I'm still tripping out over that. Even as a kid, I was like, I gotta find a girl like that. Every week, I get a new look of disappointment that I never thought I could get out of.
Unimaginable. At 12 years old, you should not be watching this movie.
Obviously.
At 13, you should not be. 14, you shouldn't be. I'm not entirely sure even 17-year-olds should be watching this.
Just because you're offended by something doesn't mean that you have the right to demand that it doesn't exist. Watching this film again, I had all of this like little nerd glee with everything that kept
little history
up.
Doll yeah, popping up
absolutely.
At you.
So I totally loved this film.
Hey, I know why you know, couldn't see that. It's because your brain's warped watching this shit at 12 years old.
Yeah, this is a rough movie. I told you ahead of time when we were getting ready to do it that it was.
How
be a
did
rough
you watch
one.
This shit at 12?
Because physical wounds heal, cinematic ones don't. Listen to Cinema Psyops.
Hey everybody, I'm Corey
and I'm Zach. And we're the hosts of Podcasting After Dark, a cast dedicated to late-night horror and sci-fi of the 80s and 90s, often found on HBO and Cinemax.
You know, the movies your parents didn't want you watching as a kid. You can find us every other week on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, and Stitcher.
This is what you want.
This is what you get.
Greetings, friends. My name is Dean Legiro, and I'm the host of the 3324 Podcast. I invite you to join me and my lifelong friend Eric Kuber to come with us as we discuss the music and movies that shaped our life. Each week, we'll pick an album or film that we really connect to, and not only give you some great info and trivia, but also discuss, debate, and celebrate what it means to us and the journey it took us on. We also look forward to hearing from you and giving us some of your picks for us to check out and discuss. I think it'll be a really fun experience, so come along with us for the ride. You can find us on your favorite podcast provider, and at 3324.buzzsprout.com. Thanks for your time, and welcome to the 3324 family.
It's time, let's check our cue, baby. Pair it with a couple brews, baby. We love good movies. We love the bad ones, too. So we watch them all and pass their lessons on to you. Oh, yeah.
Everything I learned from movies helps to make life a little bit groovy. With a one-liner plot holes, a gratuitous movie. It's time to get busy with your friend Steven Izzy.
At EILFM.podbean.com.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a jacked up.